If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Juan Castillo, and this is the Electric Drum. Now, I have with me in the studio a young lady by the name of Tanisha Bundy. She grew up in Bridgeport, and of course, I went to school here in New Haven. Went to Helen Grant, Sheridan, and Hillhouse High School. And her story is, you know, one of, you know, these unsung heroes in our community, you know, who do some great things in our community, but normally you don't hear about them. And that's what the Electric Drum is all about. So Tanisha is here with us today to tell her story. How you doing today?
I'm wonderful. How are you today?
Wonderful. I'm doing very well, very well. So tell us about your life. Now, you grew up in Bridgeport.
Well, I was born in Bridgeport.
Yeah.
And in 1983, my mom moved to New Haven. And here is where I gained all my friendships and my relationships. When I came here, it was on my 11th birthday. Mm-hmm. So that was a big surprise to me. It's like, yes. Okay, so we're moving. And I was kind of proud of my mom because it was her first house that she bought. Mm-hmm. We moved from the projects in Bridgeport to her very own house. And so it was a birthday gift for me because it inspired me.
Right, right.
But
adjusting to New Haven, that very difficult, 11 years old, you know, right?
To know me is to know me. I've always been very social.
Good.
And so I blended in with my environment very well. In fact, my next door neighbor, I went knocking on their doors at 11 and asked if they had children. It just so happened they had a few, and I introduced myself, and we're still friends to this day.
That's wonderful. So tell me about growing up in New Haven. Tell me about your experiences a little bit.
My mom, she was a single mom. She had two children with 5 years difference. And so she worked at Sikorsky's Aircraft. So she was always at work. And so we were the kids. We had everything. It's just that we were coming from a single parent who wasn't home because she was working to provide for us. And so I latched onto a lot of my friends' mothers because a lot of them as well was in a home of single parent. And so in the mornings when it's time for me to go to school, they would see me off to school. When I come home, by the time I did my homework and ate a snack and went outside, it was time for my mother to come in. And, you know, I really appreciated a lot of my friends' mother. In fact, they still are my family to this day.
Right.
So they saw me through middle school, and I started having a period of rough time during high school. It was kind of hard for me to transition into high school because that was a whole different thing within itself. I'm free to pretty much do what I want to do, and
yes.
So I don't go to school if I don't want to, and
okay.
I could go to school and cut class if I want to, and let me try this. And I'm not sure if you know Miss Wanda Gibbs, but that was
yes.
one of the teachers who kind of snatched me up and said, listen, this isn't for you.
She's a wonderful person.
Oh, she's awesome. I just attended her retirement party, and
yes.
She was an awesome teacher. Not only did she snatch me up and guide me, but she introduced herself to her mom. And then she began to mentor me as a teen.
Mm.
And when I saw that, it really showed me that someone other than your family cares about you. They're picking up where your family needs that help because it does take a village. To this day, I credit Miss Gibbs for being who I am, because I saw her work with everyone else's children, and she had her own children. And I wanted to kind of follow in those footsteps, like be the help of those who lack it or who doesn't have it. And so, I don't want to say unfortunately, but fortunately, I did have children right after high school. So I was a teen mom.
Mm.
And it was in that struggle of being a teen single parent that I realized I have to do better. This, I can't have this for my children. And so I became a certified nursing assistant. And because I'm such an advocate for those, I didn't feel like that was my niche. Like, I couldn't give my best being a certified nurse's assistant. And so I moved to Atlanta, Georgia with my godmother, just chasing the opportunity of making myself better.
Different town.
Absolutely. Boy, was it different. But it helped grow me.
Yes.
A lot of competition there. And I'm not talking about competition for anything that's irrelevant, but for jobs and education. And here's where I saw a lot of African Americans in big positions.
Yes.
Not just making money, but big positions, not because they're a basketball player or a rapper or anything like that. They have positions in corporate America. And I wanted that. At least I thought I wanted that.
Yes.
So I went to school there, and I got me a business degree. Halfway into that degree, I said, I don't know if I want to help people this way. I don't know if
you were studying business.
I was studying business.
Right.
I didn't think that I can be contained in four walls counting numbers. I felt God was saying, there's something more I want you to do.
Yes.
And so I finished, so I had my degree in business. And then I moved back to Connecticut because I was like, you know what? The jobs down here are scarce. The pay is low. Let me go home. I have a degree. I can keep up. Got home. I got me a job. And I realized this is not what I want to do. So I went back to school at Southern Connecticut State University. And I took part-time. I went to school part-time for my graduate degree in social work. And finally, 2011, I obtained my master's in social work. And I knew I had found my niche. Now I'm able to help people. Now I understand people that I didn't understand when I was younger. I didn't understand mental health. I didn't understand drug addictions. I didn't understand this, but I saw them on the streets. And now I understand it. Now I felt like it was my duty to help.
Right. And you got a degree from Southern in social work.
Yes.
Right. You were a clinical social worker and you work for the Children's Community Program.
Yes.
Right. Tell me about that. I mean, tell me about some of the, you know, some of the challenges that you have to go through in doing that job.
Okay. So I am a clinician at the Children's Community Program here in New Haven, and I work with therapeutic foster children and the families that care for them. One of the biggest challenges is that I grew up in New Haven, and so there are sometimes when I walk in a home, I know a lot, and I think the barrier is that people are not trusting sometimes, you know, and they're like, you know, you see what's going on in my household. But I automatically let them know, listen, I'm here for you and I'm here for these children. And I think I'm a believer in the children of our future. And I don't know if you've seen a lot of our children. I know people are biased and they become judgmental when they hear about some of the not so good things on the news about our children.
Yes.
But there's a reason for this. These kids are reaching out. The harsh reality is a lot of them haven't experienced love or feeling wanted, and they want their desires met of being loved, of feeling wanted, or feeling important, and so they get it by any means necessary. So they go out into the one place that welcomes them with open arms but have no love for them. But there, and what I mean by that one place is the streets. This is where you can get and be all that you want to be. And it's not true. And so now we're trying to work with families to give them the support they need so that they're able to give these youth what they need. So by support, I mean, we're there. You want to vent? Vent. You need help with something? Let us know. You need programs for the kids? Let us know. You need clothing for the kids? We're trying to help them meet the basic needs for the youth. You need an advocate for them in school. If you can't make it, let us know. We're here. We set up treatment goals and plans for them, and we go by that because our hope is that at the end of working on this goal, that the youth have all that they need to be able to sustain a positive life. Because believe it or not, I've worked with some children, and when I worked with them, they were 11, turned around, and they're 18 already.
Right.
So once they get 18, pretty much, you're an adult, and now we're going to send you to the world. And so I think, and I know that we need to send them prepared, at least to the point of them knowing what they want to do in life.
This is Juan Castillo. I'm speaking with Tanisha Bundy. she works for the Children's Community Program, and she's a clinical social worker, And she works with, you know, with families and young people who, you know, need her help, need some guidance. And you know, this is it's different today, you know. However, you know, you had mentioned Miss Gibbs, right?
Yes.
You know, and so what kind of lessons did you learn then that, you know, that you learned from her, and also the way that, you know, you went through your hard times, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think a lot of, you know, they talk about, you know, the single moms in our community, mm-hmm. you know, African-American moms, mm-hmm. right? You know, and, you know, there's been a stigma like, okay, you got all these bad kids because of that, right? Mm-hmm. But the reality of it all is that, you know, there's a lot of young people today who are out here doing some great things because there was a single mom who cared enough, right? Mm-hmm. Who then just let their kids just go off willy-nilly and work with them. So talk about your experiences early on with you know, with your challenges and how you're applying that today.
As far as single parenting.
Yes.
So some of the challenges I experienced was, one, I was young.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know a lot. And it was new to me. And where I lived, the neighborhood I lived, it was a lot of other younger people having babies. So we were like the blind leading the blind.
Yes.
And again, you can say you're going to be the best because I, you know, a lot of teens who get pregnant, it's like, oh, I'm going to have this baby. I'm going to give, I'm going to have someone to love me and blah, blah, blah. When in reality, you're going to lose going in with that thought because that baby's desires and needs are going to get met by any means necessary. So being a young mother, I didn't realize how having to have a stable home, having to have a decent job, having to have a support system in place were all factors and being successful in raising a youth. TV doesn't show you that. TV shows you, oh, they have a baby, and then you can do whatever it is you want to do and come back and have these children grow, and that's not reality. Children take time. It takes a lot out of you. Sometimes some things you don't know. And in a community such as mine, I hate to say it, but who could I turn to? Because everybody was going through the same thing I was going through.
Right, right.
Yet, you have people who weren't in that neighborhood being biased towards what was going on in our community. It was almost like we've been conditioned to be this type of people. And I think it was a setup, especially for our youth, because that saying is right. Babies raising babies. You don't have the knowledge to give these babies growing up. And so now you have everyone watching your kids because either you need to get some sleep or you need a break because now your patients are thin and you're getting stressed out. Not only that, now you may be getting depressed because all your friends are doing things that you can't do. You don't have that support system. And so in the end, your children suffer because you don't have the energy it takes to grow these youth. Now they're in school. Now the school is requiring you to show up at every meeting, every report card night. Well, what happens when you can't because you have to work or you're just so depleted in energy that you don't want to? Then you're looked upon as a bad parent. And so overall, again, it's the youth or the children who suffers from that more than anybody. And I always go back to Miss Gibbs because Miss Gibbs taught me just in her actions, sacrifice. She had her own children, but yet she sacrificed to help others with their children. And not by walking into their homes, by literally being that pillar in the school system that you felt when she talked to you or yelled at you, it wasn't coming from a bad place. It was genuinely coming from a place of love. It was almost like, listen, if you don't turn around now, you have a whole lot of unhealthy, unpleasant things coming your way. And so I gravitated towards that. It helped me raise my kids. Mm. It helped me to see that it's not about me. It's about doing what you have to do to take care of these kids. And I realized with that, a lot of people don't have that. They don't have that feeling of, or that sense of urgency of doing what you have to do to get the job done.
So in your job today, you kind of now have flipped it, right? So now you're working with some of these young parents.
Absolutely.
That are going through the same thing. Let me ask you this. I mean, obviously, they get a lot from you, right? You know, so what do you get from the job?
Knowing, so it goes back to my spiritual belief. And I always tell people this, and I have to say it here. I know, because I'm a believer of Christ. They just didn't have the name for it, but I truly believe that Jesus was a social worker.
Wow.
If you look at his works, that's a social worker. You look at the tough times he's gone through just trying to help people, how he was rejected. He was a social worker. I know as a social worker, sometimes people don't want my help. Sometimes the youth don't want my help. The parents, sometimes other service providers don't want that. But in the back of my mind, I always tell myself, you got to keep pushing. It's almost like you have to grab your armor and say to God, I'm going in, cover me. Because you have to know that people are going to reject you. But you have to know that there's going to be that one person, literally one person, that says, I'll take that help if no one else takes it. And so that's what I get out of it. It's that knowing that I tried, knowing that there was someone out there trying to help.
This is Juan Castillo. I'm speaking with Tanisha Bundy. She's a clinical social worker. She works at Children's Community Program. And, you know, she's helping a lot of families here in our community. We're talking about you know, some of the difficulties that, you know, a lot of our families have to go through in raising our kids, and also just, you know, to take care of ourselves, you know, to put some, you know, some food on the table and so forth and so on. And so, you know, I know you haven't touched on this, but I'm quite sure that this is extremely important. I mean, a lot of our young people have some issues with self-esteem, especially young women, right? You know. You know, the young guys, you know, they walk around with the bravado and all of that. They don't suffer from that as much, right? Even though sometimes they're hiding it, right? You know what I mean? So they gravitate towards, you know, the kinds of things that my society might look at it like it's wrong. But by the same token, it gives them a good feeling because now they're known, right? Known for maybe the wrong thing, right? That's my story. But for you, one of the things that you always talked, well, when we talked about, you know, about you, you know, you're very much into fashion, right?
Yes.
No question, you know, when you dress well and you feel good, right? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Nothing like somebody saying to you, man, you look nice, right? You know what I mean? You know, talk about self-esteem and how important that is in the work that you do. And then also what you do now in terms of fashion.
So, okay. So it all goes back to, again, me being a social worker. I work with a lot of youth and a lot of women who self-esteem and confidence are low. I have to admit, at one point in my life, mine was as well. I want to say a lot of women grow up without fathers or fathers in their life or a positive relationship with a man. And so some of us at times don't know what to expect. And it could be that one that may not have been good for our life who said, you know, something negative about how you looked. And then, of course, you turn on the TV and you see all the men Googling over a woman whose body is just perfect. It's the hourglass. You hear it in the songs. And so to me, TV is fantasy. But we women, we're reality. So what you're saying is, and this is how I took it, you rather live in a fantasy world than in reality. So of course it does something to a woman. We just birthed your kids. We cook for you. We clean for you. We do all this, but yet we don't get the same googly eyes that someone you probably will never meet. Someone who probably not telling you that they had all their surgery done. And so I think that's it. We watch a lot of TV and that defines what a woman should look like. In reality, it's not what a woman should look like. A woman who had kids, we might not be in the best of shape. You know, and so what I do with my fashion is my goal is to help build women's and young girls' self-esteem and confidence through fashion, because I'm a social worker again. So I'm going to get you from the inside and out. I'm going to talk to you about your self-esteem and confidence. One thing I say in particular to my young women is, someone told you weren't attractive. Why did you believe them? Why did you believe them? But since you did believe them, let's reverse this. And so I show them that it doesn't matter what you look like. It truly doesn't. You have to love yourself. If you don't love yourself, it's going to show. And therefore, by you showing that you don't love yourself, you're teaching others how to treat you. And that's not what you want. And yes, a lot of people have told me, well, it's not all about fashion. You know, I have other things on my mind. But you know what it says? The bigger thing in life is perception. So when people come across you, they look, and even if they don't know you, the perception of you on how you're dressed tells them a whole story.
Yeah.
It tells you if you're confident or not. It tells if you have pride or not. Juan, there is nothing that irks me more than to see a woman outside with a scarf and pajama pants on. I don't like it, but I don't blame them, because I'm sure they don't really know the perception that they're giving off to people. Because one thing that's funny is you have to dress the part for everything. Just like a job. Everyone knows you have to dress for a job. But when you walk outside your door, you have to know also you're like walking into a big showroom. And in the showroom, the best cars with the best features sell themselves.
But how do you approach someone like that, right? Because, I mean, I mean, I've seen it. And before you answer that question, I know what you mean, because I know growing up, you know, we had a guy in the neighborhood. His name was Big Joe, right? Big Joe was not the most attractive cat, but he was one of the cleanest boys in the neighborhood, right? Always looked good all the time, right? With his clothes, right? And he used to pull all the girls. And everybody used to be wondering, why do they like Joe so much, right? I remember him telling me, look, man, when I put on my clothes before I leave the house and I look in the mirror, I feel like I'm the handsomest guy in the world. And when I go out here and I talk to females and I talk to whoever, they feel that confidence, right? And that's what makes me attractive, right? Because, of course, we was like, yeah, all right, you pimping, you know, whatever. You know what I'm saying? But you're right, though. You know what I'm saying? But so again, let's go back to that question, though, right? For someone that doesn't know any better, right? Or let's face it, you know, like when you're feeling depressed, you know, and you're not feeling good about yourself, you know, you don't want to put on clothes. You know, you want to, whatever I got, I'm just going to throw it on, right? How do you get to someone like that?
Well, one, let me address what you just said about the guy in your neighborhood who wasn't the most attractive. There's power in confidence. And that's what people saw. People are drawn and attracted to power. And he knew it. But I'm going to tell you also, he probably looked at himself in a mirror and patted his own self on the back. He encouraged his own self. And that power came out. And so it attracted women.
Right.
And so with our young girls, I don't know if because some do have low self-esteem and confidence, their pride is not where it should be, because you should take pride in being, one, a woman, and two, being perceived by others. I've been through a lot, and I'm saying in general, not myself, but a woman should always say, I've been through a lot, but I don't look like what I've been through. You never know who's watching you. You never know who's watching you. And when people are depressed and things, you're right, they don't want to dress. However, they can't drown in that depression. You have to fight through it. And one of them is dressing, because you have to. You have to build yourself. I don't want to do this, but I'm going to do this. And you also have to know that when you dress, especially a woman, I know I feel it. When you dress, there's this feeling that comes over you. You change into a whole different person. Another part of you comes out.
And, you know, And the other part of that is that, you know, some people are under the impression, again, the television, you know, Madison Avenue, mm-hmm. that somehow, you know, it costs a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So are you here to dispel that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I ball on a budget when it comes to wardrobe.
Okay.
Because what people need to realize is that fashion is fast and quick. Fashion and trends out with the next season.
Yes.
And I think...
By the way, I'm going to excuse mm-hmm. you. I'll be glad when these skinny things, you know, because, you know, back in the day when we had the baggy stuff, I was like, all right, now, you know, they want, no, it ain't going to happen.
That's because they're watching too many TVs. That's TV coming
suits,
through.
Man, oh, my God. Anyway, it's a good look, but, you know, some of it is out of hand.
Right. I agree with you on that. But it goes to show you that fashion has no borders.
Yes.
It has no borders. And I am very honest with mine. I love thrift shopping because I'll let someone, you can buy Michael Kors and Gucci and all that because you're only going to wear it one time. You know, you can't wear it again because people are going to be like, oh, my goodness, she's killing it. So you know what you do? Pass it down to me or put it in the Goodwill or Salvation Army. I'll find it and I'll wear it well for you. I think we as a community need to know and focus on our spending power. It shouldn't be in clothes making others rich. Your money should always be invested in you. So when it comes to clothes, you can buy cheaper brands, but of quality. It's not the clothes that make you. It's you that make the clothes. It's your confidence. It's your esteem. There's nothing more, and I hate to say it, and it might sound a little tasteless, but there's nothing more tackier to me than an individual who just want labels. Mm. I'm going to let out a secret. You should only spend 5% of your earnings on your wardrobe.
Okay.
If you make $2,000 a month, you should only spend $100 a month on your clothes. No one said that you have to buy in bulks. Buy less, well, buy for less, but get more out of it. I purchased things from thrift stores and wore them 4 different times, but because I know how to switch and transition the looks, people don't notice it. I know someone who only saved money to buy name brand and wear them one time, and then don't want to donate them, don't want to give them one, but you know you're not going to wear anymore. So that's just wasted money. So you want to see your money. Is that your account?
You know what's interesting when you said that? Because I remember being in Wethersfield. And I remember going to about 3 different locations because, you know, my work was taking me to these places. Mm-hmm. And I noticed all these thrift stores in Wethersfield, right? This was a very, you know, affluent community. And I'm saying to myself, wow, you know, why do they have so many of those up here, right? And people were going in and out of there. As a matter of fact, I said, you know, let me walk in here and see what this is all about, right? Because, you know, growing up, just like you said, I want some name brands. Mm-hmm. And there was something to be said about, I don't want to get caught in a thrift store, right? You know what I mean? It's like, and that's, you know, so I go in there and I'm seeing some fly stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Almost brand new. Mm-hmm. I'm like, look at this, right? Mm-hmm. You know? And I found a couple of pieces, you know.
Yeah.
Why don't we have them in our neighborhoods, though? You know what I'm saying?
We do.
We do.
We have small consignment shops. We have the Goodwill. We have the Goodwill. We have Salvation Army. However, you're right. It can be humiliating. Because if someone sees you walking in a store, such as a consignment shop or Goodwill or something.
Savers.
Savers.
Right.
They may think what other people are thinking about them. Those are my playgrounds because I'm telling you want to find your nice blazer, nice business suit, because people who wear them one time, wealthy people, they send those things there. So just wait for them. You don't have to go to Saks. You don't have to, you know, and I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with that.
Of course.
If you have it, do, but don't go broke trying to look good I don't even know. You know, people always say, you're trying to keep up with the Joneses. Who are the Joneses? I've never seen them. But I know so many people are trying to keep up with them.
Right.
So don't try to keep up with the celebrities because they have it. And to be honest with you, half of these celebrities don't purchase those clothes. Because they are who they are, people give them that for their brand or to market.
Right.
And so they're not spending that money on that.
Right.
But I just think we as a community, we're still trying to catch up. And the way we catch up is buying things so you could see it on us. I want you to see that I look good. Because I promise you, if you peel that stuff off, there's a lot going on the inside of them.
Right.
And they're hiding it through fashion, through name brand things, through these big cars and stuff like that. And again, if that's what you want to do. However, I do think we need education in our community on our spending power. I do think we need education in our community about pride, self-confidence, self-esteem, how expressing yourself through your clothing is a good thing, but it doesn't have to be an expensive thing.
Well, it's interesting that first of all, family out there, you're listening to Electric Drum. This is Tanisha Bundy. We're having quite a conversation here, you know, about her life. And, you know, she's a clinical social worker. She works with the Children's Community Program. But one of the things that she also does is that, you know, she to build self-esteem in a lot of her clients, she talks about fashion to them. And that's sort of like, you know, her niche now, right? You know, and we're going to talk about, you know, she does some articles on the inner city newspaper, my favorite newspaper, by the way. Big up the inner city, you know. So, Babs and everybody over there, you know, but, you know, having said that, right? I mean, it's interesting what you mentioned about the 5%, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and being able to use that 5% of your income to get to buy clothes. And if you do it properly, you know, you can be looking just as good as anybody else, right?
Absolutely.
You know, but again, that's education, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and trying to get through to people to that degree, you know, is what it's all about, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. I think that in our community, you know, we keep talking about, like, you know, our spending power, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the beginning. Because mm-hmm. we spend a lot of money on mm-hmm. clothes. We do.
Oh, yes. We all like to look good. We like to look
that's
good.
For sure. But again, giving it back though to some of those folks that don't care about how they look because there's something going on, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to convince them, you know. Now tell me about your articles in the inner city. What do you try to do with those?
I call them fashion facts.
Yes.
And you know, I don't show a lot of pictures of putting outfits together and things like that because fashion and style is just not about your outfit. It's a lifestyle. It is about maintaining your health. It is about knowing how to budget. It is about knowing how to go to any type of store and find an outfit to wear for any occasion. It's about self-esteem. And so sometimes, you know, to help people save money, I had maybe about 3 weeks ago on my Facebook page, I had did a 30 things, 30 must have every woman should have in her closet.
Hmm.
And so I do things like that because if you have these 30 things, you're good. You can mix and match them with anything and you can keep wearing this stuff and wearing it and you don't have to keep buying in the rotation of buying new things. In the inner city newspaper, I also talk about budgeting for your wardrobe, the trends that are coming out, what is fashion to you? What is style to you? What is the difference between fashion and style? Mm. I need them to know this because it's much bigger than just dressing. Is much bigger. And here's the funny thing. So if you catch me on an off day, I don't look like Tanisha fashion stylist because I'm regular. I like shock value. I've worked in Hollywood and I've worked with a couple of celebrities doing what I was doing out there. And they're just like us. They do not dress up until they get in front of the cameras. They don't, so they look like us. But I know back here, people want to be dressed from the beginning to the end. If I'm running around, I can't wear 6-inch stilettos. And I love stilettos. I can't wear some of the outfits I like because some of them are over the top. So I'm going to run around and do what I have to do. But you better believe that if there's an event, I'm going to come correct and I'm going to come dressed appropriate for an event. And I think that's another thing that we need to touch on too. I've been to some events where there's been, you know, some, they weren't dressed for the occasion. And, and again, fashion is just not about dressing, but it's everything. It's everything. And I think sometimes you need to know how to dress for an event, because dressing in sneakers and jeans, you can't go to the mayor ball dressed in sneakers and jeans. Now, if you're going to a birthday party that's held at your local restaurant, you're not going to go as if you were going to a ball. So I think also people need to balance out how to dress for an occasion.
I'm a hip hop head, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a B-boy from Brooklyn. You know what I mean? I grew up with hip hop and the whole nine. And to some degree, you know, it's been a positive experience, you know, some negatives. Mm-hmm. You know, one of those negatives, you know, I mean, as you probably already know, you know, I get some pretty good parties, right? Mm-hmm. So my Juan's Day parties.
Oh, I've been there.
And so it was all, it's always about, like, you know, you got to be dressed to come to my party, you know, and if you come through the front door, you're not dressed, you're not getting in. You're going to go home. Now, I vet people. So, I mean, I had two young brothers come here, and we were talking, and they wanted to meet him because, you know, it was my invitation only. And these guys were, you know, in their early 30s, you know, late 20s. And, I mean, I couldn't believe it when they said to me, well, look, you got to wear hard bottoms. I said, what are you talking about? Hard? You know what I mean? You mean shoes? They said, yeah. I said, yeah, you got to wear some shoes. He said, well, we don't own hard bottoms. I'm like, what? It's like, yeah, wherever we go, you just wear sneakers. I'm like, oh, wow. You know, so I told him point blank. I said, you can't come to my party because you got to wear some hard bottoms, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I mean, and that's that culture, my culture, who, you know, glorified, you know, sportswear. Yeah, and sportswear, too, right? Because it's sneakers, you know, that's sports. You know, and then you watch some events, you know, where, you know, like Russell Simmons will wear sneakers to all these events or whatever, right? You know what I mean? And our young people have taken on that kind of attitude, right? You know, and so that gets us to where we are today. You know, because even though that's not an issue of self-esteem, that's an issue of, like, you know, foolishness, really. You know, I mean, I'm going to say like it is. You know, you don't own hard body. What happens when you got to go to a funeral? You wear sneakers? You know, it's pretty deep, you know. But let's get back to, you know, you work with people individually, right?
Yes.
You know, and so when someone comes to you and says, listen, you know, I need a stylist, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I need someone to help me. To really, you know, get out here and look, have the kind of look that I want to be successful. I want people to look at me like I'm a successful person, right? Where do you start? How do you begin that process?
I consult with them.
Okay.
One, I always ask them, what style are you going for? Most of the time, well, recently I've just had a lot of individuals come to me and say, I need to be dressed for this type of event. But I do closet audits.
What is that?
A closet audit is where I go to their homes and I look into their closet and we together as a team pick out the things that they want, pick out the things that they don't want, and pick out the things that they're in the middle of. Maybe I could get into this, maybe not. We clear it out because, first of all, your closet doesn't need to be filled with a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah. If it's cluttered, you're going to be cluttered and you're not going to be able to make a sound decision on what I need. Let's get that out the way. Right. You know? And so when they want to go from one style to the next style, it is a lifestyle, because if you don't feel it, it's not going to bring your potential. And so I go to stores with them. Okay. And there's nothing more fun for a person like me to go and spend a whole bunch of money that's not mine on something I love. So I love going shopping
that's
with
awesome.
People. And I will choose an outfit together. I'll send them in the dress room. They'll come out. We'll stand in front of the mirror. What do you like about it? What do you don't like about it? How comfortable are you? Now, I always, for males and for certain females, let's buy a size bigger, because I am a stickler for tailored clothes.
Okay.
Tailored clothes are the best. They fit your body perfectly. That's another thing I think we don't look into. Finding a tailor. How many tailors is there? You know, I have a seamstress way in New York. I could call her, shoot her a picture. She sends it to me. I mean, she makes it and send it back. things need to be tailored, especially suits, business suits. You're going on interviews, you're going on business dates or business meetings. You need to show the person you're meeting with, I am confident, I am proud, you know, and I have it together.
Right.
You know, for the most part.
Growing up in Brooklyn, during my era, you know, I go back a little bit. You know, there was a period of time when, like, you know, having tailor-made pants was the thing, mm-hmm. right? You know, and everybody was going to Delancey Street and buy material mm-hmm. and bringing it back to the tailor, right? You know, so if you had tailor-made pants on, you had it going on, right? You know, it was a great time, too, right? You know, mm-hmm. because young men were, like, getting the, you know, and I'm talking about, you know, Bedford Stuyvesant, you know, mm-hmm. guys that... But we when we went to Delancey Street and got those materials for cheap,
mm-hmm.
you know, good stuff, and then we would take mm-hmm. it, and it would end up costing us less money if we went to the store to buy it, you know. So I get that.
Because retail is something. Half the time you don't know these designers; they just made something that was on their mind. You liked it. You bought it because a celebrity told you to buy it, or you bought it because you liked the way it looked on the mannequin. But we have some unsung sewers and designers here, and those are our tailors. Because they work hard. They work around the clock, and they make it specifically to you. Their work caters to your body type. See, it's deeper than just outfits. It's about your body shape. It's about your body type. You know, but then again, we like everything fast. So I'm in a rush. I need to run to the store. I need to find something.
Mm.
And so we.
So you're planning.
Well, tailored stuff is being planned.
Yes.
Going to the store is not so much planned because they're going to have a whole lot of overpriced items in there.
Right.
And you're going to buy them. And that's cool. But again, you need to know you need a budget for your wardrobe. If you could, find you a tailor. If you have to buy store-bought, I always say go up a size or two, then bring it to a tailor and have them tailor-make it for you.
Right.
But a lot of people don't, you know, they don't think about that.
Right.
And I just not taught myself, but I just invested in learning how to sew. And now I know how to tidy up things. Like, you know, just this morning, I had sewn a dress together that I had ripped last year. And I was like, oh, I could do this. Mm. And I liked that. I was like, okay, so maybe I could let out the seams and I could open it up. I don't have to throw these away or give them away now. So there's so much.
That's
and
hot.
I just, That's that hot. Is my passion in fashion, not to just build everyone self-esteem, but to also educate them on the whole of fashion and style.
And, you know, there was a couple of weeks ago, you know, there was an event, you know, that Carla Morrison puts on that you were there.
Mm-hmm.
And their whole goal is to really build self-esteem in young women, right?
Yes.
You know, so you go to a lot of those events.
Yes.
Important to you. Huh?
Yes.
That's great.
I'm actually doing a workshop.
Okay.
And it was on self-esteem and your image on social media.
Great. Well, that's awesome.
Yes. And so the goal was to have young ladies understand that you don't have to bear off all these likes. And you have to be careful with social media because people out there, not just bad people, but there are people who you're trying to convince that you're hireable or employable. So they search your Facebook.
Yeah.
And when they see certain things, it's an automatic, you can't work for this company.
Facebook literacy.
Oh.
Social media literacy.
And
extremely important.
Extremely important. I don't think they get. They think, well, it's just my Facebook and it's private. It's not private and it's not just your Facebook. It's public. And everyone has the right to go up there and look to see. You don't want a public website to show a not so good side of you. I've done an interview before and the person said, you know, I have to be honest with you. I was looking through your Facebook and I really didn't see too much because I don't have it open for everyone to see. But for that person to tell me, I was looking for your sake. That was a lesson to me.
Right.
That you have to be careful. And I use my Facebook not so much for personal, but every now and again it'd be something personal, but it's for my brand, and it's to encourage others, and it's to educate others, because I do care about how people perceive me. I'm not just one way in the light and then another way on Facebook. I don't want to be associated with being wishy-washy.
Right.
And
well, you know, I want to thank you for coming. I mean,
thank you for having me.
I think one of the things that we're about is to really highlight folks in the community that are doing different things. And like I said, unsung heroes. And that's what you are. You know, you've been through a lot in your life. You know, you've overcome a lot of things. But you're giving back to our community. And that's extremely important. I think that's how we build unity and wealth and a sense of purpose, you know, for our young people. Personally, you know, I am very, very confident that, you know, that in the next 20, 30 years, you know, we're going to have a better world because our young people are doing they're doing their thing, you know, and somehow they get this bad kind of, people are just looking at our kids like, you know, like this ratchetness that we see, but that's not all our kids, you know, and then the ones that, you know, need help, you know, people like you are turning them around. Mm-hmm. So I'm confident that we're going to be all right, you know.
Yeah, right.
But I want to thank you. But listen, before you go, mm-hmm. what is the best advice you ever gotten from who?
I gotten advice from so many people, but there's this one thing that my mom said to me a few years ago. I was in grad school, and I had to do a paper on elderly. Mm. And we were given a sheet to ask questions. And I asked my mom this question, and I said to her, Mom, as a mother of adult children, what do you think your role is in your life now? And she said, I guess I would have to say, I am just a voice of reason, and I'm only here to give sound advice. And I live by that now. Mm. I'm a voice of reason. And I want to give sound advice. And I appreciated my mom saying that to me because it did something to me.
Right.
It said, you have to let people do what they do. But allow them to come back and say, I messed up. Can you help me? What do you think? And so I really appreciate that. That sticks in my head all the time. Sometimes when my youth takes me there sometimes and I'm like, you know what? At this point, they don't want the help. You're just a voice of reason.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for coming. And maybe I'll see you at the thrift store.
Maybe you will. Thank you so much for having me. Thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Juan Castillo with you. This is the Electric Drum. I know you've been inspired. I have. Have a wonderful week. And we'll see you next week right here on the Rhythm of the City, 94.3 WYBC.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.